Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the midweek version of that twice-weekly podcast for people who make fine art with needle and thread.
Excellent. My favorite one.
It's highbrow. Yeah. Highbrow. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Nicola Partman will be our guest on Sunday. And we are working with Nicola and Hands Across the Sea Samplers and with Sassy Jacks and Kim Young. Nicola has a significant announcement, which will be on the 20th, on this Friday, April 20th. And we will be posting at the end of the day, we will be posting the Sunday show on Friday because Nicola is our guest and it follows up the big announcement she has. And I'm being vague and evasive because
you have to.
We have to. So that'll be Friday. And then we'll have details about what we're doing with Kim Young and Sassy Jacks next Wednesday after Nicola has had her announcement. And
yes.
Nicola has made it possible for five people to each win a Hands Across the Sea sampler. So five listeners will each have a chance, or all of our listeners will each have a chance to win one of five samplers. Now, it won't be related to what she's going to do on Friday, but you'll be able to choose a Hands Across the Sea sampler from the stock of all kinds of them, which is a pretty good deal, quite frankly.
Yes.
that's a nice array of samplers to choose from. So we'll have details next Wednesday on how you do that. And yes, you'll have to listen to the Friday-Sunday show to get the answer to the question. But we'll have all the details next Wednesday on that. So
definitely worth listening to because this is a big one.
Yes. Yeah. In many ways. Yeah, it's very, very cool. So the Hats people have outdone themselves, I think, this time. Yes. So it was a lot of fun talking to her about that. So next Wednesday, and then if things work out, Kim Young will join us, and we'll talk about what we're doing in conjunction with Sassy Jacks and Hands Across the Sea Sampler. So listen this weekend, for sure, to get yourself up to date, and then next Wednesday will be more. But, pretty exciting, I think. I think this is... And
I'm excited to do our participation, the thing that we're going to do.
Yep. Nicola never ceases to amaze. So, plus it was just fun to talk to her. And we weaseled a few tips out of her in the conversation.
Yes, we did.
A couple of them, excellent stuff. Very helpful to me. So, hang in there for that too. Yep. So all of that coming up this weekend and next week and then in the weeks that follow. And so if you're into reproduction samplers and what Hands Across the Sea Samplers is doing, this announcement you'll want to be in on for sure.
It's a big couple of weeks.
Yep. And then on the downside, forgot to mention last week, but now we have more information. Gene Lee, our friend Gene Lee from the attic out in Phoenix, Mesa, diagnosed with stage 3 peritoneal carcinoma and had surgery on the 12th. And from all reports, it went better. I concluded it went better than expected, and it went well, the surgery. And so now, as she recovers from the surgery, then it's chemotherapy is on the horizon. And, so if prayer is part of what you do in your life, send some to Jean because she needs them. And, at least step one was a positive thing, so that's good. Unfortunate, though. And then if you communicate by email with Jean or with the attic, normally you write directly to Jean, but that is not the case because she is not at the store, obviously. So the people that work with her for her are there. And so there's a new email address, atticneedlework@gmail.com. So using that one will get you to the people at the store who can help you order items and answer questions and so on and so forth. So atticneedlework@gmail.com. If I recall correctly, the normal one, which was JeanLee@theattic.com or something like that, is just not going to be monitored if very, very often, if at all. So atticneedlework@gmail.com is your way to get to the store and get questions answered or place orders or whatever it is you do with email there. And obviously you can call. So everybody across the hobby cheering for Gene to get through this. So, yeah. Yep. Sad. Yes. Sad, but we hope that this will turn around. It's amazing anymore what they can do to battle cancer that not too many years ago was not even an option.
Right. Yeah. This is when the hobby tends to unite together.
Yes. Yep. My bellwether for cancer, and then we're moving on, is a longtime friend of mine who 5 years ago was diagnosed with brain cancer. And it's that, I forget what the name is, but it's that brain cancer that you get, and usually within 6 months, you're gone. And it took two or three surgeries, and he's not the person he was then, certainly not. But 5 years later, he's still with us and still functioning, and you can go out to dinner with him and take him to movies and things. And, you know, to me, that's a testament to what they can do to battle cancer anymore, is if the fact that he's walking around today. So speaks well for the advances that they've made. So.
Yes.
Yep. Okay, what am I doing with my stitching?
what are you doing? Or that sounds like almost a philosophical question.
Oh, Lord.
Do you mean what stitching are you doing, or...
My,
is this more, what am I doing?
The other night, I was wondering that very question. What am I doing? I got cocky with my sampler. And there's it's a band of trees I'm working on. It goes all the way across. It's trees and it's animals that are some kind of, I don't know if they're a lion or whatever. They're just this... nondescript animal, yellow, and it's tree animal. I was not watching the chart, and one of the trees, young Sarah Parr, way back in 1825, decided to do one of the trees completely different. And I thought, well, I know how to do these trees. I've done half dozen of them. I'm good to go. I got done. No. No. I have got to learn to watch these samplers like a hawk, these charts like a hawk, because you cannot assume that each motif is the same as the previous one, even if they look the same. So, yeah, so that one had to come all apart. I was not happy because I was getting over to the right-hand side and could see the end of this band of samplers or a band of motifs, and, yeah, had to come apart. I will learn eventually to study the chart before I do each item. But right now,
you know, maybe I think if I was in that situation, maybe what I would do is at the beginning. So talk about studying the charts, look for places where it breaks from, routine is not the word, but breaks from pattern, and mark them with a highlighter. So that you know. So if something, you know, skips a row, or something has a spacing that's irregular, or has a, you know, a motif that doesn't belong there, if you're following the pattern perfectly, you know, mark them with something so that when you get to that portion, you know, to, you know, heads up that this is not the same as everything else.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Well, it makes perfect sense. And now you just made me do one of those, you know, palms to the forehead thing. Because, you know, I one of my childhood things was never deface a book. Always use extreme care with books. Never deface them. And I kind of carry that through to my charts. I don't like marking. I don't mark on my charts. I don't like to.
Yeah.
I'm very careful. And then I forget the common sense thing, which is to make a copy of the charts, which I have not done. And then mm-hmm. I could do that very thing. I could have put a great big old circle around that tree that says, hey, idiot, this is different. So,
yeah. And I would argue that in this case, this might be the time where breaking the rule of marking up books is warranted, because you're actually improving because if you were to stitch it again ever, you know, you would want to do the same thing over again, right? You're just giving yourself a landmark. So it's not like I guess what I'm saying is that you're not defacing it. I don't like the use of that word in this context.
And see, and now I just had another flash, because when I first started this sampler, I bragged about the really cool idea I had where I'd picked up from someone where you copy the chart and then you cut out each of the motifs and then just pin them to your canvas, okay? Brilliant, brilliant little thing that I completely got away from. And if I had been following that through, I would have caught this too. So basically, the more we talk this through, the more pathetic I'm looking.
No, I don't think so, though. You know why? Because you, and it's not even a you thing. I was going to start on a little thing about how you are a person of order, and you are. And so you walk in a world where things are orderly and expected, and that's fine. But charts should be orderly and expected, and things that are now, well, and maybe that's the key, things that are designed are symmetrical and they're predictable. But these are not things that are designed. These are things that have been reproduced. So if someone were to take something even that was stitched from a chart today, there may be mistakes in it. So you can't count on the fact that it is going to follow any rules. Right?
Yep.
So the idea of trying to pigeonhole it into, you know, following a rule is, you know, it's not strange to expect it to follow a pattern and then have it not, right? So, and if this is your first reproduction sampler, then this is your first encounter with, this is not going to follow any of the rules, and I have to remember that I'm stitching someone else's stitches, not stitching what something was supposed to be.
Yes. And that's the hardest part.
It's a different way to think about it.
Yeah, that's the part I'm having trouble. Because years and years of needlepoint, especially charted canvases, where everything is the way it's supposed to be. And it's mm-hmm. rare that there's an error. And,
okay, so here's a question for you. So how do you feel when you get to a portion of the chart that is imperfect, and you have to stitch it imperfectly in order to perfectly replicate it?
You know the answer to that.
Well, no, but it's the battle of two perfects, because you can perfectly replicate it, or you can stitch it, in what it was supposed to be done perfectly. So I'm just wondering which of those perfections wins out for you, or are you just sitting in this state of discontent?
Well, doctor, no, you just hit a spot. You just hit a spot, because it's very much a problem for me. I stitch it the way it is charted because I want it to look as it was done, good, mm-hmm. bad, or indifferent. But it rubs me the wrong way. Yes, yes, doctor. Yes, doctor. Bingo. Bingo.
So now, when you look at the sampler once it's done and framed, is your eye going to always be drawn to those glitches?
Of course.
Or are you going to be able to look at it as a whole?
Well, this is and this is the great dilemma, because this is why it's messing with me. Thank you for the therapy session, but because it will drive me nuts. You know, this does not match the others. So that will drive me nuts, but then I'm torn because I want it to be exactly as it was stitched. So, yeah, so I'm working both sides of this deal here. No wonder I'm having trouble with this. Okay.
Right.
This goes against every grain I have.
Exactly. It does. It does. This is excellent because it's forcing you to do something that you're not comfortable with. And I think that's a good thing because we've talked about this even with photography, where if you have a photograph that anyone else would look at and say that's a beautiful photo, you will find the mistake and you won't be able to see anything else except for the mistake. And so this will be, you know, if you can try to, you know, look away from that and see the whole thing, this will be a really good exercise for you because and it's easier to do with this because you have the history, you have the process, you know, the little girl, you know, a little bit about it, you know what it took for her to make this thing as a whole. And for her, it was a whole. It wasn't a mistake, right?
Right.
So I'm going to challenge you to think like she should have thought, because we wouldn't want her to have sat there and just thought about how she made a mistake. We would have wanted her to think about how she accomplished something beautiful. So I'm going to challenge you to stretch beyond what you're accustomed to and look at what you've done and look at what she's done and train your eye to see the whole.
And see, you're the one who's supposed to be having the brain problems, not me. See, this is what's this deal? Yeah, no, you're right about the photography because I'm sitting here and Marga has two framed collections of flower photos, 14 photos, I have thousands.
We talked about this.
Yep. And I have, it probably can point to two photos out of thousands where I could say, yes, nailed it. I can't find a thing wrong with it. And right in the center of this collection of 14 is a shot of a lotus blossom I did that is, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it at all. It's spot on all the way around. And that's the only one I see in the whole thing. My mind just blocks out all the rest. Boy, I'm a mess.
But this is good, though. This is good because you're going to have to. So here's the trick, though. So this is the mind trick that you're going to play. You're not going to think of it as Gary. You're going to see it through Sarah Parr's eyes, right? Because think about it. When you're a little kid, when you're raising a kid, you don't want your kid to focus on their mistakes because then they end up with all these, you know, self-confidence issues and then they're just miserable because then all they think about is, you know, how they can't ever do anything right. So if you were teaching her, you would want her to focus on, okay, you made a mistake and that's okay because the next one is going to be better. And you'd want her to look at the whole thing. So I want you to try to do that and think of it as her and see it through her eyes and see what that feels like. And then the next time you'll look at another thing, it'll be easier because you'll be familiar with that feeling of looking at the whole despite the error. But it's easier to do when you're sort of play acting as somebody else because it doesn't feel as jarring and uncomfortable because it's okay for Sarah to make a mistake, even if it's not okay for Gary to make a mistake.
Okay. All right. I can play that game. This is interesting. Yeah.
It's hard. It is hard.
You dug it out of me right there. Yep. I got both ends working against each other. This is not good.
Mm-hmm. It's going to force you to do something. And I like that.
Oh, boy. Yes. Mm-hmm. Stitching. Many dynamics. Many dynamics. Yes.
Much mm-hmm. to learn.
You really got me going now. See, you got my wheels just spinning here. No wonder, you know, no wonder I'm fighting with this thing all the time. Yep. Okay, doctor. Well played.
You're welcome.
Well played. Now I just got to fear your fee. You got to look for the invoice. Yes. Mm-hmm.
No, I just want to hear how it goes.
Okay. All right. Okay, gonna take a new view of this thing. New view.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yep. Because now I'm thinking back, like, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Now I see. Yeah. Right, no, this is where I would walk away and think about it for, you know, 15 minutes and, you know, and sort it out. But I'm not going to do that.
All right.
Now I see the problem. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. There you go. Now I wonder how many other people have this problem. Probably not. Probably not anybody's messed up as that. Yeah.
No, I think we are trained to do things. And then I think a lot of people do see, you know, focus on the imperfections of things, you know. I certainly do the same thing quite often, depending on what the thing is. It's hard not to do that because you want to do the right thing, you know. And it does depend on how you're raised, you know. If you're raised to always want to do the right thing and impress somebody or, you know, please someone, then you do that. It's kind of in our nature.
Yeah. Yep. Because I do carry that thing about books. I have no idea why that was, you know, where or why that was put in my head, but it's always been, you know, use extreme care with books. Don't drop them. Don't deface them in any way. I have no idea where that came from, but that's one of those childhood things that I carry with me to this day.
And yeah.
I've always been intensely careful with books. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, even like school books, it took me the longest time in college, the longest time to take a highlighter to a textbook. I couldn't bring myself to do it. And finally, I just saw the benefit enough that I did it. And, you know, and other people would have their books all written in and marked up and highlighted and notes on the sides and everything. I could just never do that. It had to be on a separate piece of paper. 'Cause buying my used books, for the longest time was like buying a new one. It was just, I was the best deal in the bookstore, you know? Oh, okay. Well, this has been a fascinating little therapy session. Yep. All out of the person who's got the concussion. How does this work?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it didn't affect all of my brain.
Yeah. So, okay, so I got to work my way through that. And then my other hump, and see, now I'm wondering how much plays into this other issue I'm having, which is surface embroidery and getting over the hump of getting started with that. And you know, because we talked about that, and I've been so busy lately, I haven't had a chance. But I'm going away, going on a trip here for several days. And I'm going to take my surface embroidery projects and I am going to force myself to put the muslin and the linen together in the hoop and
just do it.
Do it. Got, you know, it's the only stitching I have with me, so I'm going to just force myself to do it. And I have no idea because, you know, I've done embroidery before. It's not like I haven't done it, but I've never done it with two layers like that. And This is just, and I have no idea why I can't get over that hump. But anyway, I'm not going to have a choice. 'Cause that's what I'm taking and where I'm going, I'm going to have a little time to stitch and I'm going to do it. So when I come back.
Two layers is no different than one layer, especially if you have the tulip needles, because they're just going to glide right through the fabric.
Well, I have those. I have everything.
Yeah.
It's all lined up. I have everything. So mm-hmm. I just got to, yep. Yep, gonna do it. The sampler's staying home because it's too big to haul, and this all fits in a small bag, and that's what we're gonna do.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to. You're just doing the monogram, so you don't have to start with anything.
Well, this was so ridiculous. I don't know why. I don't know what the deal is. But that's so, was so ridiculous. It's just monograms on a little 4-inch piece of linen. What do I care?
Right. Right. You know? Exactly.
What do just I care? I mean, it's...
Just
so
do, yeah, easy stitches.
Yep. And, yeah, it's not, there's nothing tough about it. It's lazy daisies, French knots, and stem stitch. Come on. You know, do that in my sleep. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just in a weird place these days.
Mm-hmm. And you'll do it, and then you'll say, oh, that was easy. And then you'll be off to the races, and it'll be fun.
Well, that's what's going to be. Whether I'm off the races or not, that's what it's going to be. I'm going to do it. So,
good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There we have it. Oh, and then one tip, and we got to, this has to be short today, one tip from Mary Corbett with one T that was interesting that where do you, you know, 'cause, and I've had this question, where do you put the hoop hardware? And I was, you know, if you're doing a hoop, I was taught to put the hoop hardware at 10 and 2, because that will keep it generally out of the way of your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Mary Corbett says to put it at 3, 6, 9, or 12 o'clock, because that puts the hardware parallel to the grain of the linen. And that's where you tend to pull is...
Mm-hmm.
And so then you will not as you're not as likely to pull the linen out of alignment or out of whack.
Yes, that makes sense, right? Because then you pull it out of square.
Yes.
Mhm.
So
I'm trying to think. I think I always do it at 12.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, that was going to be my question: was where do you put it? Because I was thought 10 or 2.
Yeah, I think I always do it at 12. Just because it feels out of the way to me. And I don't think I ever knew that there was a rule. I think it just seemed intuitive that if I put it there, it's going to be out of the way. So I'm just going to do that.
So you tripped over the right way without knowing, but.
Yeah. I think I do that a lot.
But see, for just in general, I do. Every day is a surprise. But yeah, I mean, for me, it was how do you keep it out of the way? And I just asked that question. That's what I was told by someone, so I went with it.
Mm-hmm.
But at 12 o'clock, that should be out of the way just about all the time. So
yeah,
yeah. But yeah, it keeps it where you tend to pull the most to keep it tight. And see, you know, the reason I asked that long ago was, and I did, that was before I knew anything about wrapping the hoop. And
yes.
Oh man, that's the game changer there, wrapping the hoop.
Yep.
Oh man, is
absolutely
that holding it tight. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The only ones I don't wrap are the little plastic ones. I have one little, it's like a 3-inch plastic hoop. And it's got a ridge on the inside, and that you do not have to wrap at all because it holds fabric so tight. It's ridiculous. And it pulls, it's one of those where you pull it through and it doesn't slip back in. It's just really good. So anything that has a ridge on the inside, you don't have to wrap, but any of the traditional old, wooden ones. Cause I have a bunch of just really inexpensive, like, they're the worst embroidery. Like the ones that everybody says don't use those, that's what I have. But once they're wrapped, they're very workable.
Yeah.
And the reason I think you don't want to use them is the ones that are very inexpensive tend to warp and bend. So when you're trying to pull your fabric into the hoop and you're stretching it, it's easy to you can almost stretch the hoop out of it's not square, out of circle,
yeah.
So that your fabric then isn't square, and then you stitch and everything comes, I'm going to lose the word, but when you take it out of the hoop, nothing is square and
right.
Everything is stretched the wrong way. So yeah, having something made out of wood that doesn't bend easily is much better. But once you wrap it, it definitely works much better.
Yeah. Yeah, because I had those kind of hoops, and I threw them away and got good ones, and yeah, it's a difference
mm-hmm.
maker, yeah.
Yep.
But wrapping it, yeah, big, yeah. So, okay, so that's my next thing. So when I come back from my trip, I will have embroidered.
You're going to hear all about it.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting for everyone. So. Oh, and then, okay, so... I had to order new horizontal bars for my Millennium frame. I completely botched this Millennium frame order. Completely botched it. Okay, because I got the longer sides thinking that would give me more stitching surface area. And I did not listen to Nicola, who said get the shorter sides. So I got the longer sides, and then that made it so that when I was starting at the top, then I had to stitch upside down because I couldn't reach all that way without and be comfortable. Okay. So, all right, so I got the shorter sides, and that changed that game. But now I want to do one of the Hands Across the Sea samplers, that is now I need the wider bars. So I need the 36 inch bars because, you know, Nicola doesn't know how to buy a small sampler. So, so I need the 36 inch bar. So I had to go back to, the Millennium Frame people, Needle Needs or whatever their name is, and order these. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes, because they said it was the 36 inch bars were ready for order, which must mean, I think that means that they're coming up on making them or making them now, but
yeah,
you know, I don't know. But anyway, so I was fortunate there because that means that I'll get them in a more reasonable time. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes to get these 36 inchers. But basically, when I did it, I should have ordered 36 inch crossbars and short sidebars, and then I wouldn't have to be going through all this. So I completely botched that.
Right. Well, but you know, though, if you were stitching something smaller, you don't want to have it on such a huge frame, because then it's just, it becomes weighty and unwieldy to work with and everything. So it's nice to have, you know, a little bit of flexibility.
Thank God you're here for silver linings, you know? Because otherwise I'd just be a depressed mess. So see, thanks for showing up today.
Glad I could be of assistance.
Yep. All right. I think we're going to end on that silver lining right there.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I think that it's going to be good. It. Yep. So listen Friday, which will be the Sunday show, to hear the big announcement from Hands Across the Sea and Nicola Parkman. And I also can't talk today, which does not help. And to hear about her big announcement, and then next Wednesday to hear more about what we're doing with Sassy Jacks. And, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yes.
That's it. We'll be back Sunday, Friday, Sunday with Nicola, and the two of us will be back on Wednesday, and we'll look for more silver linings to help me through my mental problems.
Take care.